Welcome to the Shir in Targumim, Parshas Mishpatim. The Shir this evening is sponsored by Blimi and Amir Nakash, marking the yard site tonight of her father, Yerachmiel's wife, the Neshama Shel Eben Aliyah. She sees much nachas ruach, the Torah mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim that the family are involved in. Yesterday we spoke a little bit about how the Targum Onkelos sometimes brings in Torah Shabbal Peh, sometimes does not bring in Torah Shabbal Peh in terms of his explanations of the Pesukim, and really we don't have such a clear approach as to how to explain when he does and when he doesn't. We gave some of the explanations of the Achronim yesterday, but in the end of the day it's still a little bit of an open question as to when he does bring Torah Shabbal Peh explanations and when not. I wanted to focus tonight on a few examples where the Targum does weigh in Parshas Mishpatim. You can say that he brings in Torah Shabbal Peh explanations, which is explanations which go beyond the simple pshat of the pasuk itself, and shed some light on those understandings. So, towards the beginning of Perek Chof Aleph, pasuk yud. So the pasuk is speaking about, again, a specific instance, but it speaks about the obligations that a husband has to his wife. The pasuk says, "She'era susa ve'onasa lo yigra." The husband vis-a-vis his wife, again, it's talking about a specific instance, but it's beyond, you know, what we need to focus on tonight. A husband, in terms of his obligations to his wife, should not detract from the she'er, sus, and ona that he's obligated to provide for her. So what's she'er, sus, and ona? So Rashi over here brings she'era is mizonos. In other words, that the husband has an obligation to provide food and money for food to his wife. That's part of his obligation. Susa, says Rashi, kimashma'o, what it sounds like, sus is garments, clothing. A husband has an obligation to clothe his wife, he has an obligation to feed his wife, you know, to clothe his wife. Ve'onasa, so it's Rashi's tashmish, this refers to the sexual obligations that he has towards his wife, in other words, that he has to provide that kind of provision for her on a regular basis. Share ksus ve'ona. And if one takes a look in the text of the ksuba, so these three basic obligations of the husband towards his wife are delineated there as well. The Targum Onkelos follows suit in the translation. In other words, the same way Rashi translates these three elements is the way that the Targum Onkelos translates them. Ziyuna ksusa ve'onsa lo yimna. Ksusa ve'onsa is essentially just the Aramaic translation of ksusa ve'onasa. Right? It's almost identical. He has to provide clothing for her. He has to provide, he has to be there physically for her. So he should not refrain, lo yimno, he should not refrain from providing those various things. And she'er is translated by the Targum Onkelos as ziyuna. To be zon, we know from benching, means to provide sustenance. Hazonis ha'olam kulo v'tuvo. The word mizonos itself is based on the word zon. So here Rashi again, rather the Targum Onkelos is clearly going in the same path as Rashi and translating she'er as mizonos, that he has to provide food for his wife. Now, this on the surface may seem unremarkable, and it is, as Rashi points out, a gemara in Ksubas Mem Zayin on the base. However, there is something striking about this translation of the Targum Onkelos, because if one looks into the Gemara, one finds that it's actually a debate there as to whether the husband's obligation to provide mizonos for his wife is a Torah obligation or a rabbinic obligation. Everybody agrees that the husband is obligated to provide food for his wife, but again, what's the nature of that obligation? Is that something that is decreed by the Torah itself? It's a din d'oraisa. Or is that a din d'rabbanan, a rabbinic law, which the rabbis put into place? Clearly, Rashi and the Targum Onkelos are taking the position, in other words, it's not just a simple translation, the Targum Onkelos is taking the position that the obligation of mizonos is a Torah obligation, right? In other words, the word she'er means ziyuna, that he has to provide for her mazonos. Another thing that's striking about this, and the Ramban over here talks about this at length, is that were it not for this particular example, it's very unusual to translate the word she'er as meaning food in any way. Wherever we find in Chumash the word she'er, it usually has the connotation of the flesh, or you know, even a person who's very close to someone else, right? So to take an example, by the parsha of the Arayos, where it talks about how a man is not allowed to enter into a relationship with somebody who's a relative, an incestuous relationship. So the pasuk starts off by saying ish ish. What is she'er b'saro? She'er b'saro means his flesh. A man should not approach a relative who is of his flesh. In other words, somebody who is of his family, who's close to him, to engage in a sexual relationship. To take other examples, so when Lavan speaks to Yaakov, Yaakov, you know, says that he's prepared to leave Charan, and you know, Lavan says, "No, why should you run away?" Ach atzmi uvesari ata, right? You are part of me. You're like my flesh, right? And we find other examples where the term she'er is used in the sense of one's flesh or someone who's close to that person. Right.
So is it possible to share there somehow it's related to property or somehow related to, I'm going out on a limb here.
Right.
Property and mazonos. I'm not sure. He inherits her property through that pasuk, so therefore I was wondering if there's some type of connection there.
Right. So it's not so much in the context of property, In the context of Tumas Kohanim, who the Kohen is allowed to be metame to, so it says ki im l'she'ero hakaro ve'lo. Right. So there too, first of all, she'er means one's relative, and Chazal Darshan specifically she'ero means his wife. In other words, his closest relative, the one who is flesh of his flesh, so to speak. Right. So the Ramban spends a lot of time on this pasuk talking about how the simple meaning of she'er is really flesh, and you know, it implies closeness. You know. A relative who's particularly close. He says, where do we find that she'er means money? You won't find anywhere else where she'er means money. So the Ramban actually says the simple pshat in the pasuk is that she'era ksusa ve'onasa is actually one thing. It's three terms that refer to the obligation that the husband has to be close physically to his wife, the sexual obligations that he has vis-a-vis his wife. She'era, his being of one flesh with his wife. Ksusa, the Ramban says the ksus referred to is not the clothing that she wears generally, but it means the bedspread. In other words, you know, setting up the bed properly, and onasa being available for her at you know regular times, you know, in that kind of sense of things. So it's one phrase, says the Ramban, that means that you know means that there's supposed to be a relationship of sexual closeness between the husband and the wife. Sherek suso ve'onos, it's all really one thing. I mizonos. So says the Ramban, the simple pshat in the posuk is that mizonos is a dinder abonim. It's a rabbinic obligation. It's not a Torah obligation. You have to, you know, according to the Ramban, you have to kind of twist the posuk a little bit in order to come to the conclusion that she'era means mizonos. You know, that it implies a Torah obligation for the husband to provide food to his wife. Right? And yet, with all of that explanation of the Ramban, it's clear that the Unkelus is comfortable translating She'era as Ziyuna, as talking about Mizonos. And as such, here's an example where the Targum Unkelus has to get involved in a discussion that's in the Gemara, has to tip his hand on the issue of whether Mizonos is Daraisa or Darabanon. In some cases, the Targum Unkelus was able to kind of tiptoe around the you know, the need to bring the Torah Shebaal Peh and the Torah Shebiksav together, but here he can't avoid it. Here, you know, he has to tip his hand in terms of saying that Mizonos is a Daraisa. Right? So again, a seemingly simple translation of the Targum Onkelos has much more behind it than we would think at first glance. Take another example. So we saw, we referenced this last night briefly in Perichof Aleph Pasuk Yud Ches. V'chi yirivun anoshim, when there are two people fighting with one another. V'hika ish esreihu, and one man strikes his fellow. Be'even o be'egrov, he strikes him with an even or with an egrov, and the other person is injured. Right? So the next pasuk goes on to say that the assailant has to pay his victim, you know, for various injuries that he inflicted upon him. What's the translation of even or egrov? So even, okay, that's the simple one, you know. That's every student is hoping the teacher will call on him for that translation. Even means a stone. Okay, he hits his friend with a stone, takes a stone, hurls him at the guy, right? Contrary to what the media believes, stones hurled at people can kill them, right? Even though somehow when they report on stuff going on in Eretz Yisrael, you know, oh, it was just a stone that was thrown, a very, very innocent kind of thing. You throw a stone at somebody, it could kill you, right? We don't have to elaborate on that. What's an egrov? So, Chazal consistently used the term egrov to describe a fist. So that's the way the pasuk reads, right? In other words, you know, Reuven hits Shimon either with an even, with a stone, you know, in other words, he has an object, or with an egrov, he hits him with his fist, you know, the old-fashioned way. Like, what stone? I don't need a stone, you know, I'm good on my own. So how does the Targum Onkelos render these two words? So he writes, the yimche gvar yas chavrei, one person hits his friend, be'avna, with a stone, o be'kurmeza. The word egrof he translates as kurmeza. I assume everybody here knows what a kurmeza is, so we can just go on, right? But, you know, for the one or two people who may, you know, not be up on their Aramaic, you know, like they didn't get the Babel Aramaic program. So what exactly is a kurmeza? So the Rashba, it's very interesting over here. Rashi does not say anything. The Rashbam has the following comment. O be'egrov, lefi apshat kitargumo, right? Says the Rashbam, the simple interpretation of this pasuk is in accordance with the Targum. The Rashbam says the Targum is really giving us the pshat, which is that egrov means min even o levena. The word egrov means some kind of stone or a brick. Some kind of stone or a brick? Where'd you get that from? Shaharei b'hashlochas even medaber ha-posuk. Because look at the context of the posuk, says the Rashba. He hits his friend with an even or with an egrov. So in other words, he's talking about using some kind of item to hit the other person. Again, you may say, like Rabbi Grabstein points out, which is, wait, so the first one's an even, the second one is a fist, right? Notice the point is, either he hits him with an object, or he just hits him with his hand, but the Rashbam learns not like that. He says what we're talking about clearly is that the assailant is using an object to hit his victim, either a stone, or an egrof, which he says is like, you know, if not exactly a stone, like a brick, or, you know, some other, like a man-made stone, you know, that he's using to assail the other person. So where'd you get that from? So he says, if you take a look in the Targum in Parshas Mitzora, so in Parshas Mitzora it describes how a house can be stricken with tsara'as, and the pasuk there says, v'chiltzu es ha'avonim, they should dismantle the stones of the house, and the Targum Onkelos over there renders avonim as kurmezon, right? As the same word that he uses over here, kurmeza. So apparently kurmeza in Aramaic, just in case this ever comes up, you know, kurmeza in Aramaic apparently means bricks or stones that you would use for building. So says the Rashbam, so that's what the Targum Onkelos is telling us over here as well. One, the person hits, the assailant hits his victim with something that can do damage. Right? Now, again, it is possible to hit somebody with a fist and do a lot of damage as well, but usually you're more likely to cause damage if you're going to use a blunt object like a stone or a brick or the like. That's what egrof means.
What's the chiddush?
What?
What's the chiddush?
So why does it say be'evin or be'egrof?
Yeah, I mean, if an egrof is a brick, like, you know, the same.
Right.
The same, it's either, you're hitting him with an object.
Right. So what do I care what kind of object it is?
It's a round object or, I don't know.
Right, a square object.
The shape of this stone.
Right.
But a brick usually is a, like you said, a man-made object.
Right.
But still you're hitting with an object. You're not hitting it with your own hand.
Right. So let me share the Ramban over here. It could be the Ramban will provide an answer to this, even though he doesn't ask the question explicitly. Right? So the question is, according to the Rashbam, if an egrof means a brick, so why do you have to say he hits him with a stone or with a brick? Or he hits him with a stone or a brick or a baseball bat? Or he could hit him, you know, there's no end to the list of things he could have hit him with, right? Obviously, if the Torah is spelling out, he hit him with this or he hit him with that, you know, there's something to be learned from all of this. So the Ramban gives an interpretation that is a little bit different than the Rashbam, but is similar. He writes, egrof means regev afar, a clump of dirt. And he brings some proofs to that. And he says, v'hu da'as unkulus sha'amar bikur meza. When the Targum Unkulus uses the translation bikur meza, he doesn't mean a brick in the sense in which you and I think about a brick. He means a heavy clump of earth, right? And then the Ramban goes on to say, "V'hiskiras eila gam kein lemor ki gam beregev yumas im hikal b'makom sheyesh bo kedei lahamis." Now, a clump of earth is a lot softer than a stone. According to the Ramban, the chiddush of the pasuk is that if the assailant kills his victim, the assailant will be held liable whether he threw a stone at him, where he could assume that it's going to kill him, or even if he just threw a clod of earth at him. And again, however it worked out, the trajectory of the clod of earth, where it hit him, you know, how it hit him, whatever, it ends up killing him, even there, he's going to be held liable for his death. He can't say, look, I just threw a clod of earth at him, I was just kidding, you know, and all of a sudden, now, you know, the guy is dead. Right? You know, whether you throw a hard object at him or a relatively soft object at him, you know, you're going to be held liable in the same way for the consequences. Is this what the Rashbam means? So, I think it could be, because, again, remember, the definition of brick, you know, is different when you're thinking, you know, 2022 in America versus, you know, what they were talking about back then. A brick very simply meant, you know, in many cases, earth that was just packed together, dried, so it was a little bit harder than normal, but still not quite the consistency of a brick the way we think about it. So it could be that the Rashbam as well, when he talks about a levena over here, a brick, you know, we shouldn't picture, you know, the red bricks that we have in all of our buildings today. We should be thinking a little bit more along the lines of, you know, something made out of dirt that's hardened and maybe baked in the sun, which is, you know, it could kill somebody, but still softer than an evan, right? Where'd you get the definition of egrof, you know, meaning a fist? So the Ramban says that's the usage of Chazal to use the word egrof to describe a fist. It's not necessarily the case that the way Chazal use a word and the way the Torah uses a word are going to be identical. They're examples of words that, you know, are used one way in Chumash and a different way, you know, by Chazal. So again, here you have, you know, this word which we think is familiar, and, you know, the Targum Unkelus is telling us, well, not necessarily. You know, there's something deeper here. And again, according to the way the Ramban understands the Targum Unkelus, there's also a chiddush in Halacha over here that, you know, whether or not the item which is being used to assail the person with is something that you would ordinarily assume could render, you know, could deliver a death blow, nonetheless, you know, the assailant is going to be held liable for the damage that he produces. Yeah.
Thank you.
not going to affect us on a daily life. God spoke to these things that, you know, unfortunately, the way we see the relationship has to relate.
Right. You see, Parshas Mishpatim is eternally relevant, 100%. Yeah.
You see, the case where you were fighting with the hand, you were able to cause some damage with the Malach, and Yaakov shot it out. He just put, maybe the word, the hidden word over here, Be'evin on the Egro, oh, I feel the Egro. You might think if you're fighting, it's natural to hit someone with your hand, you don't have to pay. So he's telling you, okay, so I feel it's a natural battle. Right. By the way, he inspired you.
Oh, okay. Very good. Okay, say that. So let me share one more example in the Sedra where the Targum Onkelos really puts forward a translation which is very much an interpretation, not merely a translation. And this actually gives rise to a lot of discussion in Poskim. So in the beginning of Perachov Beis, we have the psukim that describe the Baba Machteris, the thief who's tunneling into somebody else's house. Imba Machteris Yimotzei HaGanov, if the Ganov is tunneling into a person's house, he's, you know, breaking into the basement, V'hukov Omeis, and the owner discovers him and kills him, Ein Lo Domi, right? The owner of the house is not held liable for killing the intruder. Why is that? So Rashi over here writes as follows. Kanlim das chatara, the Torah is teaching you as follows. Im bala hargacha hashkem lahargo, the famous principle, if someone is coming to kill you, you should get up and kill him first. In other words, you know, you have a right to defend yourself, and even not just defending yourself, you can take preemptive actions when you see that somebody is coming to kill you. How do I know that this guy is coming to kill me? I mean, I thought he's just tunneling. It's not nice that he's tunneling into my house to take my silver. But, you know, who said that he was going to kill me? Shareyo v'zeh lahargachoba. It says Rashi, again quoting the Gemara in Sanhedrin, you should know that this guy for sure is coming to kill you. Shareyo deyahu, shein odo maimir atzmo. The thief knows that the owner is not going to just sit by idly while you take his stuff. He's not just going to allow people to come and tunnel into his house and take his money. He's going to try to defend his items. So the one tunneling into the house, the Baba Machteres, takes for granted that if need be, I'm prepared to kill the owner of the house if he stands up against me. In other words, he's not coming specifically to kill the owner of the house, but he's prepared to kill the owner of the house. If he's prepared to kill the owner of the house, then you have a right to kill him, and you're not going to be held liable for doing so. That's the first pasuk. The next pasuk beis says as follows: Im zarcha hashemesh alav, if the sun shines on him, on this thief, domim lo. So then the owner is held accountable if he kills the thief, if the sun is shining on the thief. What does that mean, if the sun is shining on the thief? So Rashi over here writes as follows. Ein zeh elokim in moshal. When the Torah talks about the sun shining on him, that's a metaphoric usage that means as follows. Im baror l'cha adavar sheyesh lo shamom imcha, if it's clear to you, the owner, that you have a quote-unquote good relationship with this guy who's tunneling into your house, right? In other words, if it's clear to you that he has no intention of killing you whatsoever, kashemesh hazesh hu shalom ba'olam, it's clear to you as the sun that this guy has no intentions on your life, kach poshik l'chosh en l'bol arog, afilu yamod ba'al hamon kenegdo, you know, if there's a case where the guy for sure is not going to kill the homeowner, what would be such a case? Kigon av hachoser lignov mamon haben, biyodua shirachme ha'av ala ben, ve'eno ba'al iskei nefasho. So Rashi quotes an example from the Gemara, which always, I think, strikes one as strange, but it's just a window into the complexity of human relationships, right? A father is tunneling into his son's house to steal the son's items, right? So clearly there's a little bit of dysfunctionality between the father and the son over here, right? Nonetheless, says the Gemara, it's clear to us that the father is not going to kill the son, the homeowner, under any circumstances. Why? Because the father has rachmanis on his son. Ironically, the Gemara says, the other way around, we can't necessarily assume that. If it's the son tunneling in to steal stuff from his father, the son might kill his father, right? But, you know, the father tunneling in to steal stuff from his son, he might break into his son's house. He might be tunneling under, you know, underneath the foundations, you know, to try to get into his basement and steal stuff from him. You know, obviously, there's something, you know, not quite right in this father-son relationship, but one thing we know the father would never do, the father would never kill the son, right? So the son, the homeowner, can rest assured that the father is not going to pose a threat to his life. That says Rashi, im zarcha shemesh olav, if quote-unquote the sun shines on him, meaning it's clear that, you know, there's no threat to the homeowner's life, so then the homeowner has no right to kill him.
Is the homeowner allowed to protect his property before?
Yeah.
Or, you know, if he can't take all the property from the old villa, you have to give it to him.
Right, no, so it's interesting. So al pi halacha, you know, you could say, well, if the homeowner was really a tzaddik, you know, if it was like the Chofetz Chaim, you know, as a homeowner, the homeowner should, you know, like run away and leave a sign, you know, please take everything, I don't want to kill you. You know, I don't want to be put in this situation. We see that he's not obligated to do so. Maybe you can say some Midas Chasidus for him to do so, but we see he's not obligated to do that. He has the right to protect his property, and he has the right to protect his property under these circumstances, even if it will possibly lead and escalate to the point where he's going to kill the guy who's coming into the house. Right? Yeah. Okay, whoa. If you talk about Uncleus, then you took away the whole shiur. You know? So what are we going to do? Right? So that's Rashi. So the Targum Uncleus has the following interesting translation. So the pasuk says, "Im zarcha shemesh olav, if the sun shines on him, on the thief, domim lo." Right. So then the homeowner is not allowed to kill him and is liable if he kills him. Says the Targum Unculus, "Im eino desahadayo nefalas alohi, if the eye of the witnesses fell on him." In other words, if the thief was caught on camera, so to speak. In other words, witnesses saw the thief tunneling into the building. Demale. So then, the owner is going to be held liable. Right? So somehow the Targum Unculus says that Zarcha Hashemesh, the sun shone, is also not meant literally. It's not talking about the sun, but it's talking about the presence of witnesses who see what's going on. What does this mean? So Be'ezus Hashem will pick up tomorrow. It's a whole discussion. Pick up tomorrow with a lot of discussion in Rishonim that comes off of this Targum Unculus. Rabbi Chananel ben Akasha Omer, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Zachos Yisrael.